Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. August 12, 2019. My thoughts on Twitter, August 12, 2019. We are in the material, spiritually inanimate, world to have the opportunity to create conditions that are independent of spiritual, internal, states. To help by actions as long as we are unable to help by intentions. Every lesson is participation in building the Kli, even by a physical effort. Every person that mourns the destruction of the temple, soul, will merit to see it. We must pray for society's correction, for creation of intentions to bestow, Rosh, Kabbalists, above desires to receive, Guf, the nation. Desires are in the nation. While intentions to bestow must be developed by Kabbalists. The soul is the head, Israel, intentions to bestow, and the body, desires to receive. The soul's correction lies in attaining intentions to bestow. Desires do not change. The soul's breaking is that intentions became for reception, in order for us to be able to correct them to for bestowal and connect them with desires. That is how the soul is revived. The soul's breaking by the Creator till our state was necessary so it could be restored by people. That's what the Creator revealed to Abraham in advance. It is just preparation to realize the need to perform the correction now. Only it counts as man's work. The past is preparation from above. Intention is called the head, and desire is the body. We work on intention so it will direct the desires and we'll be able to use them correctly. If the congruence between the two disappears, it means destruction of the body, temple. Creation of the temple is when the congruence of intention and desire is restored. The Times of Israel published my new article 2019, The Year Anti-Semitism Became as Routine as Breakfast. Regular reports of anti-Semitic crimes and threats have converged into a foreboding trend characteristic of our times. Whether it heads toward a destructive climax akin to the Holocaust, or a positive shift toward a much better situation for both Jews and the nations of the world, is a question solely of how the Jewish people respond to the rising hatred against them. Historically, anti-Semitism is a phenomenon that has undergone periods of latency. And then quickly erupts into waves of violence and fear. Over the last few years, we have witnessed a modern surge of anti-Semitism, and today it has become as routine as breakfast. Anti-Semitic crimes and threats have become happenstance events that often don't even merit news headlines anymore. As with any problem, what is the point of a constant array of reports about the problem if it is not accompanied with a solution? Since I have found both the root cause of anti-Semitism and its solution in the wisdom of Kabbalah that I've been studying for the past 40 years, I feel it as part of my duty to bring its unique explanation to the world so that both Jews and non-Jews can relate to the phenomenon with understanding and awareness, learning exactly what buttons to press in order to reach a solution to anti-Semitism. Also, the solution to anti-Semitism is important not only for Jews, but for all people, as it directly goes hand in hand with a much better, happier and comfortable life for everyone. But before discussing the solution, here is some recent data that my students gathered about the phenomenon in order to show its global scale proportions. In England, an all-time record was once again broken, and in the first half of 2019, 900 anti-Semitic incidents were reported. In Canada, the numbers are similar. Only in 2018, 2,000 anti-Semitic events were recorded, and earlier this year in July the Canadian court banned the marking of Judea and Samaria wine as made in Israel. Two CNN broadcasters resigned after one of them issued Hitler support messages and the other compared Jews to pigs. In Miami, a man in his 60s was shot outside the synagogue. Human Rights Watch head of Human Rights Organization refuses to recognize Israel's right to exist. The head of the organization is a Jew himself. the Jewish and anti-Zionist movement, if not now, is trying to influence the younger generation of American Jewry through anti-Israel educational workshops for instructors. A Jewish museum in Germany published an exhibition showing the relationship between Jews and money in a negative light. The Jewish community failed to close the anti-Semitic exhibition, and in light of the exhibition's success, it will be extended. The UN condemned Israel for violating women's rights. Among the voters for the condemnation were China, Russia and Iran. The question then becomes, what is the ultimate cause and message embedded within such growing anti-Semitic sentiment? I speak and write a lot about the role of the Jewish people, which is to unite, love your neighbor as yourself, Leviticus 19:18, and pass unity to the world, to be a light unto the nations, Isaiah 42:6. It is not coincidental that the daily unfolding of anti-Semitic events runs parallel with social division and hatred penetrating developed human societies one day to the next. The more the world suffers from increasing division, the more there is instinctive blame on the Jews for failing to perform their role. That is the root cause of anti-Semitism. I communicate this message regularly upon the foundation of regular bursts of anti-Semitism in order to point the way to the solution, a method of uniting the Jewish people in order for such unity to spread to humanity at large, bridging its growing divisions. Likewise, since anti-Semitism is an outcome of the nations of the world subconsciously feeling that the Jewish people are failing to perform their role, many non-Jews throughout history have voiced their demand upon the Jews in a way that directly points out the need for the Jewish people to become a beacon for unity to spread to the world. One example is Vasily Shulgin. Shulgin, a native of Ukraine, was a senior member of the Duma, an elected semi-representative assembly in Tsarist Russia, before the 1917 Bolshevik Revolution. Shulgin proudly declared himself to be anti-Semitic, and in his 1929 book, What We Don't Like in Them, he analyzed dozens of articles of his hostile perception of the Jews. Shulgin complained that Jews in the 20th century became smart, effective and energetic in exploiting other people's ideas. But he protests that this is not an occupation for teachers and prophets, not the role of guides of the blind, not the role of carriers of the lame. Moreover, if there seems to be a contradiction between hatred of Jews and the desire to see them as a people destined to lead the blind, a metaphor Shulgin uses to refer to humanity, Shulgin reiterates this demand in his book in various ways. If the Jews lead humanity to its destination, then let them, the Jews, rise to the height to which they apparently climbed in antiquity. And immediately, all nations will rush to their feet. Give us Jewish rule, wise, benevolent, leading us to the good. And every day we will offer for them, for the Jews, the prayers, bless our guides and our teachers, who lead us to the recognition of your goodness. It is a wonder that great anti-Semitic ideologues are sensitive to the potential of the Jews, and develop a dual attitude toward Jews, on one hand, hatred for the Jews' current form in the world, and on the other, recognition of the Jews' greatness. However, it is greatness in potential. We Jews need to discover for ourselves what it is that makes us great, to realize our potential to unite and pass unity to the world by implementing a method of connection that we once received, and which we are now expected to reawaken and innovate in order to suit our modern times. In tandem with the anti-Semitism growing increasingly fierce every day, we must empower our unity for the sake of the world's unity. If we do so, then we'll see an end to anti-Semitism, and not only will it end, but it will invert. All those haters of Jews will become lovers of Jews, and all those thoughts and efforts against the Jews will become thoughts and efforts in support of a people that brings unity, peace, love and happiness to the world through their efforts to unite. My new article on Cabinet, Tackling Rising Stress Due to Climate Change. Global warming is a burning topic. Extreme heat waves, unparalleled in human history, have become a source of rising stress, a problem we no longer perceive from afar but on our own skin. Heat stress is estimated to cost the global economy $2.4 trillion a year in the next decade, according to the United Nations, but the impact on mental health is no less worrisome. Americans are already among the most stressed people in the world, and today's global warming is not contributing to alleviating the pressure, particularly among the young generation. Extreme heat might pose health risks that will not let people work, particularly outdoors, leading to the loss of 80 million jobs worldwide by 2030. These are unflattering projections by the International Labour Organization, ILO, that serve as a reminder that there is no time to wait. Tackling the current state will require new paradigms, a completely new way of thinking, since the previous ones have brought us to a precarious reality. Recent studies reveal that people feeling the heat more are the new generation. At the same time, they are the agents entitled to change the failing world inherited from their parents and grandparents. But there is a problem. A staggering 90% of Generation Z between ages 15 and 21 report the worst mental health of any generation in the US, the highest level of stress, according to the American Psychological Association. The stress is reported to be due to gun violence, political turmoil, and personal problems. It is the most vulnerable population in terms of mental well-being, and now a new daunting challenge has been charged to them: to carry on their shoulders the responsibility for the future. We need to encourage and support the young generation to grease the wheels of recovery, leading humanity to a state of tranquility and balance on all levels in nature. The success of the new generation in flipping the situation will depend on how they start behaving. The older generation, for its reckless quest of new industries and development, is destroying our planet. We need to support the new generation's efforts to stop this hasty and careless tendency. We need to understand that the world is integral, interdependent, and increasingly interconnected. Therefore, every action impacts the whole system, the Earth, the cosmos, and ourselves. But even before actions, the greatest power we have is the power of thought. If we become closer to each other, connected through the power of thought, that is positive intentions to benefit one another, we will be able to stop global warming and the planet's deterioration. However, an individual's concern and thoughts alone won't render results. The force that will generate a true and effective change can only be activated collectively. How can our relations be such a powerful force able to change our environment? The reason is that the human level, the highest and most developed in nature, is precisely where the problem resides. Our egoistic nature, personal gain at the expense of others, is the most harmful and destructive force in nature, negatively affecting nature's lower levels, inanimate, vegetative, and animate. Therefore, the way to restore nature's balance is to repair our broken connection as humans, the root cause of ecological imbalance. It is clear that in a world where at least a dozen countries have nuclear capacity, there can be no egoistic solution at the physical level. We just have to change ourselves, our attitude and behavior toward each other, in order to recover our ecosystem's harmony. The time for that is now. Therefore, we need to encourage and support the young generation to grease the wheels of recovery, leading humanity to a state of tranquility and balance on all levels in nature. Add the good force to the evil force. After the destruction of the temple and exit from spirituality, people decided to lower their relationships down to the lower degree, instead of an internal connection from heart to heart. They just became outwardly polite to each other. Thus, external laws were created that determine how to act in the field, how to treat someone else's ox or donkey, and the neighbor's property, in order at least not to steal from and harm each other. If it is impossible to connect with their hearts, then at least let us not allow hatred to burst out between us. Therefore, on the earthly, corporeal level, it was necessary to establish all kinds of laws of behavior, which as if reflected the spiritual laws. If there is no love for one's neighbor as for oneself, then at least do not do to others what you do not wish for yourself. Thus, relationships were lowered from the level of the heart to the corporeal level of hands, feet, and tongue. Instead of connecting from the entire open heart, we began to follow instructions, checking each time in the book what we should say to the other so as not to offend the other. After all, there was no other way. It turned out that externally, relationships were extremely polite so as not to offend the other in any way, but internally, each one hated the others and did not want to get near them. But the main law of the Torah is to love your neighbor as yourself. Connection is reached not through changing everyone by changing their opinion, understanding, and heart. On the contrary, with all the diversity of opinions, we must rise above all contradictions and connect with each other there. Otherwise, we will never come to unity. The people of Israel must connect on two levels, as it is written, love will cover, the second floor, all crimes, the first floor. Let us learn how to make this tasty sandwich in which love and hate, plus and minus, sweet along with bitter and salty, are combined. One cannot be without the other. The entire creation should exist in such a form, and this will happen only if the people of Israel implement this correct approach and direct all the others to it. This is why we need to learn how to connect above all differences, hatred, and rejection between us. On one hand, we are ready to strangle each other, but, at the same time, we embrace each other, and we exist between these two states in the middle line. Therefore, each of us is correct, me, you, and him, we are all right, each in his own way. But for the common truth and justice, it is necessary to rise above everyone in love that covers all the differences. We must learn such faith above reason, the middle line, the ascent above the egoistic human nature. This is called existence on the spiritual level. As soon as we learn how to do this and exit our egoism, rising above the clouds, above this world, above the force of egoistic reception, we will find ourselves in the open world and begin to feel the spiritual reality. The correction is to add the good force to the evil, egoistic force. The Creator created the evil force and He will give us the good force at our request. It is said about this, Prophets, Isaiah 45:7, who forms light and creates darkness, who makes peace and creates evil, I am the Lord, who makes all these. That is, everything comes from the Creator. But we need to connect the light and the darkness together so that the darkness will shine as light. The connection between everyone must arise above the hatred because everyone hates everyone else, including himself. Only the wisdom of Kabbalah, which teaches us about the middle line, can teach about such a connection. Inside this sandwich we have built, between the first and the second floor, between hate and love, we reveal the Creator and adhere to Him, achieving eternal and perfect existence. It is unnecessary to destroy the evil, it is only necessary to understand that it is the foundation to which we must add the good. Therefore, I am ready to meet with anyone who hates me. I do not see him as an opponent but as a partner in achieving a new state to which we all need to come. From the second part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, the 31st of July 2019, Tisha B'Av, 9th of Av. Michael Leitman, on Quora, as an American Jew, I am horrified by the anti-Semitism and racism that seems to have slithered out from under a rock since Donald Trump was elected. At what point does it make sense to leave the US? What would have to happen for you to leave? It won't help you to leave America. Don't think that by leaving America you will do yourselves and the world any good. In order to make a positive impact in the world, which will also put an end to anti-Semitism and racism, you will need to start understanding what the nations of the world demand of you and what you need to correct. Your good future depends only on that. Therefore, I recommend, as quickly as possible, to recognize what is the role of the Jews toward all nations of the world, and let us approach this work because by doing so, we secure a good world for them, for us all, and our future generations. The Structure of the Universe, Part 7. Upper Worlds, Degrees of the Revelation of the Light Question, are different degrees of concealment of the light of the Creator called worlds? Answer: the revelations of the light of the Creator in me are called worlds. Peace, in Hebrew, Olam, Alama, is from the word concealment. Question: so this is not about some worlds like we think of worlds? Answer: no. There are no physical parameters in them. I feel them only in myself, in my desire. Question: Kabbalists divided this into five worlds. Does this mean that if I conceal the light of the Creator from my desire to receive by 100% it is the highest world of Keter? Answer: no, on the contrary. When I completely conceal myself, it is the world of Asiya. Above it, when I conceal myself a little less, it is the world of Yetzira. Next is the world of Beria. And when I begin to seriously reveal the light, it is the world of Atzilut. The full disclosure of the light is called the world of Adam Kadmon. Thus, we have all in all five worlds. Question: do all these worlds come before the creation of our world? Answer: our world, as they say, is illusory. It is as if it does not exist in the spiritual world because it is fully built on receiving. It is the preliminary stage of the world of Asiya, the red rectangle in the drawing, a supposedly existing state. Question: who described these worlds and when did they do so? Answer: Kabbalists have been describing all this for thousands of years. The first discovery of the worlds was made by Adam. What has reached us and is described in the Torah was written by him and his students Shem, Ham and Yefet. Question: so this information has existed for thousands of years. Answer: it is almost 6,000 years since the time of Adam. This knowledge has been passed on from generation to generation, 10 generations from Adam to Noah, and from Noah to Abraham another 10 generations, and then, as described in the Torah, from Abraham to us. From KAB TV's Basics of Kabbalah, the 27th of November 2018.